Well, welcome into another edition of See What's On. And today we have a special guest, a voice you've probably heard if you've been to any of the harness racing tracks and the fairs, especially around the state. But we have Bill Ellis, who is a longtime race announcer at the harness race tracks at Windsor and Union and Bangor and Scarborough. You've heard his voice if you've been to the tracks and listened to the races being called. So, Bill, welcome into the show.
Well, nice to be with you this day.
Well, let's see, you know, this is a chance to get our listeners to know a little bit more about you, but also to talk about a special event that's coming up. It's akin to our Super Bowl, but it's for harness racing horses.
Yeah, October 12th is what they call the Festival of Champions. It's a culmination of the top horses in the state of Maine, 2 and 3 year olds. It's divided up by gait, either trot or pace, and it's divided up by gender, either a filly or colt or gelding. And it's a big day of racing. These horses will compete at the county fairs, also Bangor and Scarborough, during the spring and the summer. And then it all comes to a final conclusion for the big money on October 12th at Scarborough Downs. And it starts at 1:30. There'll be 8 races on that day.
8 races and a chance for anybody who really cares about horses. I mean, it's the best of the best of the harness racing horses in the state of Maine, all coming together for one day of racing on October 12th at 1:30 in Scarborough Downs. So, Bill, let's dig in a little bit. This is the Festival of Champions. It's really the best of the best in the horses from the state of Maine, all part of the Maine Standard Breeders Stakes. What does that mean for the people that are new to the harness racing industry? What does it even mean to say the Maine Standard Breeders Stakes?
It's the Maine Standard Bred Breeders Stakes, yeah. And what it's involved is horses that are bred in the state of Maine.
Mm-hmm.
It's an industry in / sport that brings not only money to the participants, but ancillary money to the people around the sport, like the veterinarian, the feed store, you know, the people that work with the horses, the grooms, the trainers, the drivers. So not only the owner is making money when his horse is successful, but there's many other people down the road. The fellow that sells the trucks that haul the horse trailers.
Mm-hmm.
So there's many, many aspects. You know, a dollar in purse money can sometimes go up to 10 times the value, the way it's spread out, in the economy,
mm-hmm.
the state of Maine.
Mm-hmm. And that goes, if somebody goes to the fair and they go to the horse races, they might be buying food, they'll be buying gas, they'll be, you know, I've seen people wheel in with their campers and spend as much as a week at some of these fairs, and so there's all kinds of economic spinoff. But I think you're really getting at something that a lot of people don't realize, and that's the history of racing, you know, as I understand it, in places like Maine, being an agriculturally based state. We used to race our horses to get to church on Sunday morning.
That's correct. Yes, standard bred racehorses were very much a part of the growth of this nation. You had, you know, the doctor that would, you know, have his wagon that would travel the roads. You know, they were standard bred racehorses. And like you had mentioned, that a lot of times on a Sunday, when they would be heading to church, that, you know, you would come across your neighbor. And you give each one of the horses a little tap to see who could make it to the church on time or the quickest.
Right.
Pacing racehorses, to note that Paul Revere actually rode a Narragansett Pacer on that famous ride in the 18th of April of 75.
That's an interesting tidbit. I didn't know that.
Another big fan of horse racing, or harness racing, I should say, was Ulysses Grant. He loved horses. He used to spend time down in Goshen, New York, which is where the Hall of Fame of the Trotter is located. And they also call it the cradle of harness racing in America, because many great racehorses started there. And the foundation sire, kind of like the granddaddy of them all, the horse by the name of Hambletonian, is buried in that area.
Hmm.
And he is known as the foundation sire. And many, many of the horses that race today, they can, you know, bring their lineage right back to Hambletonian.
And people today, that's really popular to think about the the big races, the Triple Crown races, and the flats, really, the people with the riders on the backs of the horses. But we're talking about the horses with sulkies, and they either pace or they trot. But these horses and their owners and the drivers, there's such a history for people new to it. It's just like following a sport or a team. And we used that analogy a little earlier about the Super Bowl of harness racing. But this industry is the same. If you there are people with favorite drivers, there are people with a favorite lineage of horses, and all of that goes into handicapping and figuring out, you know, the likelihood of a horse being a great racehorse, right?
Exactly. Yep. The people do have the favorites. There are certain sires in the state of Maine that seem to do a little better than others do. And certain drivers seem to have a little more talent, as some of the trainers seem to have a little more talent.
And again, people latch on, like their favorite quarterback or running back or whatever in football, or pitcher or whatever. These the horses and the drivers. The horses are athletes, and
most definitely, yes.
And if you've been around horses, they act like athletes. They want to race with other horses of the same skill level. And even if you put a horse in, I've seen that happen as I go to the races. If you put a horse in a race with horses of another skill level, they perform differently.
That's true. They do get competitive. And a lot of times when people will look for horses to buy, and if there's a dozen horses in a field, they sometimes will take a look to see who's leading the pack.
Mm-hmm.
So the horse that's in front, they figure has a competitive nature, or you know, a typical type A personality.
Mm-hmm.
And those type of horses usually do pretty good.
And, of course, what we're trying to do in emphasizing, even talking about this on the show, is to bring greater awareness to harness racing as a form of entertainment, as well as an important economic engine to our state. For both reasons, we want to bring younger people back into understanding of what this historically important industry is to the state of Maine, and hopefully get them excited about going out and trying their hand in watching a race or two, and potentially even in betting on a horse race or two.
The thing that I like about harness racing versus thoroughbred racing is any person of any size can compete. Thoroughbred racing, you have to be basically very petite to race a horse, to sit on its back. But harness racing, though, I've seen people from many different sizes, you know, the widths, the height. I mean, it's a game open to anybody that's willing to sit behind a horse and compete.
And it's also an industry where a lot of women are involved. There are some great women drivers.
Yes, they've had a lot of women out of the state of Maine that have been very successful over the years. A couple of the gals up there now that will compete, there's a gal out of Farmington, Maine, Charlene Cushing.
Mm-hmm.
And Charlene, I give her a lot of credit. She's a gal with a lot of drive. She's not only involved in the racing industry, her and her husband Michael, but she had a side career that she worked on, and she's a nurse now. And she took her test, I think, a year and a half ago. Valerie Grandin, who stabled up in the Bangor Raceway, another girl from the state of Maine, and she's done very, very well in the industry over the years. She has an owner that she trains for by the name of Bill Varney. The name may sound familiar with Varney Automobiles and Varney Insurance. And Bill Varney, who has invested a lot of money into the sport, has had a tremendous amount of success come back his way. The girl Charlene Cushing, she's not from Maine, but she resides in Maine now, and she moved to the state of Maine because, you know, it's a place that you want to be.
Mm-hmm. And the whole idea of owning a racehorse is, it may seem foreign to people, but there are actually people that go in together. They form clubs, if you will, of four or five people. They get together to own a horse. So the idea of owning a horse is not as formidable as it might sound, right?
I think that's the best thing in the world if you have partners. Reason being is there's an expense that comes with the horse. So if you have to, you know, spend so much per month, well, if you have a partner and you get to split that 50%, of course the purses are split 50%, but when the horse wins, you don't have 50% celebration. you have 100%.
Mm-hmm.
So you have that benefit. And there have been partnerships that have been set up by people that are longtime friends or classmates and from school. And it's a commonality with them, and it brings them to the track together, and it's a social event.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And if you follow the industry, I've been around it since I was about 16 years old, and I don't even want to get into how long ago that was, but the reality is that I've noticed the same families. I mean, the Height family in the Skowhegan area have been longtime racing fans, and the Holdens over in the Freiburg, Bridgeton area. There's great families and histories of families and ownership, but that's growing and expanding and can grow more because there's a great deal of fun and interest and economic importance to the state around this industry.
If you allow yourself to get involved or even to touch it, you'll love it. I mean, I would say that people that when they get around horses and realize that they can be like big pets in many ways, they fall in love with them. And each horse has its own personality. Again, you mentioned many people that have, you know, the Height family, the Dillon family, mm-hmm. from, you know, the Skowhegan area. These people have involved many generations. You take the Graffam family
mm-hmm.
out of Cumberland or Maine, right in that area.
Mm-hmm.
And they have been involved in 10 generations, that farm. So that's a long, long time.
And we need to bring that back because we still are a very agriculturally based state, and this is a very important industry to the state. But let's come back a little bit more to the race itself. Again, this is such a huge event. It is the best of the best in the horsing industry in the state of Maine. And I can remember going back to, you know, I don't think they called it the Festival of Champions back then, but I can remember some historically important horses. I remember a fond memory of seeing Mountain Skipper race at Rockingham Park in New Hampshire, but that was a Maine horse that went on to legendary status, you know, in the United States as one of the best in harness racing.
Yeah, Mountain Skipper actually was the last son of Meadow Skipper. Meadow Skipper was known as one of the premier pacing stallions. Mountain Skipper was owned by a fellow by the name of Art Nason. Art Nason lived in Freedom, New Hampshire, and he was viewed as an underdog. He didn't have the fanciest of equipment, didn't have the best-looking racing colors, but God, when he got on the racetrack with Mountain Skipper, they sure made their presence known. And he traveled up and down the East Coast. He actually set his lifetime best in Lexington, Kentucky. They raced down there, a track what they call the Red Mile. And I tell you, as a kid growing up, Mountain Skipper to me was like Tom Brady is to kids that yep. love football. I mean, Mountain Skipper was he was great. I mean, there was a big race. They used to have the the Atlantic Seaboard Circuit, where they bring the best horses from the eastern part of the country. And he raced against these at Foxborough Park one night, and he wasn't picked to win, and they brought in some monsters. Well, sure enough, it was Mountain Skipper's nose that was first at the wire in that particular race.
It's the stuff of legends, and it is actually there's nothing more exhilarating than being out there standing right near the dirt, right on the side of the track at the rail, watching the horse that you've put a couple of bucks on crossing that track, but then to watch somebody as historic as that horse was. And I'll never forget it. I know the hair on the back of my arms just stood right up, the thrill of watching that horse win yet another race. So it's really the spectacular kind of sport and a lot of fun for people to get involved with. So, again, we're talking about October 12th at Scarborough Downs at 1:30, the Festival of Champions, 8 races. But we should also mention the drivers and the trainers get some awards in this event as well.
Yeah, currently right now there's a Maine fellow by the name of Gary Mosher.
Mm-hmm.
Gary's driven in the state of Maine for many, many years. He's also was quite successful in New York City between Roosevelt Raceway and Yonkers Raceway. He currently stands in the top of the driver standings. The horses that he has driven so far have made close to $200,000 in the 2019 racing season.
Mm.
The top trainer I mentioned earlier is Valerie Grandin. Her horses made just a hair under $200,000 for those that she trains. A couple of other top trainers, Gretchen Athern. Now, there we go. This the top two women, Val right. Grundin and Gretchen Athearn. Gretchen is stabled at the Cumberland Fair grounds, and the horses that she has have made close to $160,000+.
Hmm. I mean, so we're talking about some serious money.
There's a lot of money that's given out in prize money, but there's a lot of money that's invested also. Mm-hmm. I mean, you have people that have the farms where these stallions stand and where they raise these babies. And the key part about it is it's open lands. So when you have these fields, and it's nothing more beautiful to see these horses when they're running and they're playing in the fields. You know, there's not condominiums being going up. There's not a shopping plaza being put on that piece of land. That land is designated strictly for agricultural open lands, and it's breathtaking. And then these horses, when you see these babies after they're foaled, and they grow up and they become racehorses.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And it's great to mention. I mean, these are babies. They're 2-year-olds.
Right. There's 2 and 3-year-olds.
2 and 3-year-olds. Yeah.
Yes.
So these are young animals, and they're just beginning their careers, and they're absolutely beautiful in every case, and they're all different and unique in their own way. So again, if you have any interest in horses, I would encourage you to really check out this major race to see the best of the best right there in Scarborough on the 12th. And by all means, if you have any interest in this sport, this industry, ask an owner, contact the Maine Standardbred Breeders Association. They'll help you out. I know you must know Bill. It's a very accessible industry. People are more than willing to talk about how to get involved and to help support this industry grow.
I tell you, if you're involved in it, like you can be on a minute level, you're going to love it. I mean, it's just everything about the sport of harness racing. It's an American sport. I mean, it was created here, and it's the spectator. Amount of spectators is diminished a little bit. I mean, because there's so many more activities that people can do. And the sad part about it is, you know, people do it in front of a TV set with a video control in their hands.
Mm-hmm.
But to get out and about, there's nothing like the smell of hay. There's nothing like to see a racehorse.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and for people that invest in the game, it can be very, very profitable. For instance, there was a horse that was owned by a fellow named Mike Andrew. And Mike's from Gorham, Maine, and he had a champion horse by the name of Obrigado, and he raced 2012 and 2013 as a 2-year-old and 3-year-old, and made over about $170,000. Well, his career after that, he was so good, he's made up to $1.8 million.
Wow.
He's one of the finest horses that ever came out of the state of Maine.
So that would be with breeders' fees as well, or
yeah. Well, he was involved the first 2 years, basically involved in the breeding program. So he would have been what would have been like the champion, like in 2013.
Mm-hmm.
He had 13 races he competed in. He won all 13 races.
Wow!
Made $100,000. As a 2-year-old, he had 10 races, won 8 of them, finished third one time, made just about $68,000. And then from there, he went on to the bigger stages. And made his presence known. He's raced all across the country, and he's he represents the state of Maine very, very well.
Mm-hmm. And it's a great example. Not that everybody's going to go right out there and make $100,000 or $200,000, but there is money that can be made. And if you take it seriously and really study the industry, there's an opportunity there for any number of people at the same time that you're having a little bit of fun.
Well, it's like that song, a chance of a lifetime and a lifetime of chance.
Right. There you go. There we go. And isn't that all, after all, what we all do to some extent? And I know, I've taken many people for their first experience to a track to watch a day of racing. And in every single case, people that I've taken for the first time come away saying, I had no idea how much fun this could be. And it really is a great way. You go out usually in the afternoon or early evening. It's beautiful weather. It's often in the summer weather and into the fall. Great weather to enjoy the outdoors. And as you say, the smell of the hay and even a little manure once in a while. It's invigorating and it's a great way to spend an afternoon.
I've never been fond of it, but anyways. Manure on your shoe.
Yeah.
But if you really want to get a feel for what it's like to be in a race, the Maine Harness Horsemen's Association has this virtual reality goggles that you put on. So they have you sitting in with a jaw cart, and they put these goggles on, and it gives you the sensation that you're actually in the race.
Oh.
And it's, you know, you turn to the left, you turn to the right. It's actually like you're in the race, and it's, I guess, like a 360-degree, you know, view of it.
So it's like you're sitting on that sulky and
yeah,
riding right behind the horse.
And I've always felt that if more people had the sensation of sitting and seeing what it is really like, there would be more people would get involved.
Mm-hmm.
If you're a competitive type person, you know, and you sit behind a horse, and I've actually driven some horses before, and when you ask that horse for speed and it actually kicks into gear, I'm telling you, there's not a greater sensation in the world.
I can only imagine. I've never done that part. I've never sat behind a horse. I'd love to someday, and I know there's any number of drivers out there that would be happy to accommodate me to come sit on the sulky and take a lap around the track during a training run or something. But, and again, that's what we're talking about here today. Get out and experience this great historic part of our state. Harness racing is there. It's here to stay. It's not going away anytime soon. When we're convinced that if people get out and experience it, they're going to want even more of it. So get over there on the 12th to the Scarborough Downs racetrack at 1:30 and watch the best of the best, 8 races, 2 and 3 year olds running their hearts out to show us what this sport can be all about.
It's a great day, and I welcome everybody to come on out to the races.
And get to listen to Bill as well.
Well, I won't be announcing at Scarborough Downs. I will be doing Winner's Circle interviews.
Oh, there you go.
Yes.
Great. And that's a great part for people to get to know more about the drivers and the owners, and because they all have interesting histories in and of themselves.
So. Yes, most definitely.
Well, Bill, thanks so much for taking time with me today, and I really appreciate it. We'll look forward to hearing more about this and hopefully have you back on the air again soon.
Sounds great. Thank you very much.
All right, Bill. Take care now.
All right. Bye-bye.